You're listening
to Welcome to Comics, episode number 301. This week, we talk about Monstrous, the Blood. Visit WelcomeToComics.com, hear past episodes, see what we're reading next, or send us feedback. This show is supported by listeners like you. Access bonus episodes by becoming a patron today at patreon.com/WelcomeToComics. And now, the cast begins.
One other thing before we jump into the book or into this week's comic. Did you guys see the pictures of the new actor who's supposed to play Hellboy?
Yeah. Ooh.
In his makeup and stuff?
Yeah.
He looks like Ron Perlman a little bit, but he also looks like a Mike Mignola drawing a lot.
Yeah.
Like he's got a lot of sharp lines and stuff. He looks cool.
Yeah, I'm really psyched for it. What I like too is a lot of the comments I'm reading, like they said, oh, he looks just like Ron Perlman, and the response was no, Ron Perlman looks like Hellboy, which is why I
saw that on Reddit, I think.
Yeah, which is like that's why Ron Perlman was such a fantastic cast, not because he was the right actor. I mean, he did a great job with the part, but also Hellboy looks like Ron Perlman. So
yeah.
Then to cast somebody and make him look like Hellboy just means making him look like Ron Perlman, mm-hmm. which is fine.
I sent the picture to Jen if you want to look at it.
That's really good.
Right?
Yeah. It looks fucking sick.
So yeah.
Do we know
there was some stuff.
Do we know the plot of this one's gonna be? Is it gonna be the Mike Mignola original stuff? Is it gonna be BPRD stuff or Hellboy and Hell?
No idea.
Ooh, I'll have to find that out. I really have loved all of the Hellboy we've read for this movie. That should have been my volume 2. Nah. I'm good with what I got.
Oh, man, I haven't picked my volume 2 yet.
I know, you gotta get on that.
It's been busy. It's been a busy week at work.
Yeah. Oh, the other thing, they're coming...
Oh, I know what I want to read.
Okay.
I think I know what I want to read.
Okay. They're coming out with a volume 2. Or, sorry, they're coming out with an omnibus for Justice League International. The
yes.
Matteis and Giffen run.
Oh, God, I'm buying that.
Yeah. So, I'm buying that, too. I already have, most of that in hardcover, but I'm going to sell those and get the omnibus.
I have some trade paperback versions, and, I just have trades.
Yeah, and the Omni is, it's $55, which is, nothing for a hardcover that collects that many comics.
That's a pretty reasonable price.
Yeah, it's, the first three trades, which, saving money then.
I'm pretty sure that's what I have, the first three.
Well, there you go. Least. Swap them out.
Yeah.
Oh, and next time we record, we're going to probably be talking about Star Trek Discovery and Orville. It's going to be a lot more Star Trek next time, because Discovery is out in a week.
Oh, wow.
I think the 24th?
24th. I am pumped.
I am, too. You know, that it seems like it's getting a lot of negative fanboy reaction, but you know what? It looks cool. I mean, Star Trek. I'm excited because it's Star Trek, really.
Yeah, and the main reaction is it looks too Wild Westy and action-y. But my response is, that's because I think most of the fanboy reaction is people who grew up watching TNG who want, armchair Trek, hotel in space Trek. And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with, the moral discussion and all that, but, OG Trek was pretty action-y, too, sometimes.
Yeah.
And Kirk's known for being a run-and-punch kind of captain for a reason. So if we... And Archer, my God, Archer just was like, we need more guns on this ship all the time. So if it's a more action-oriented, that's fine. That should work with your canon. It really, really should. For that period of time. For Starfleet? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It makes sense.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm reserving judgment because I'm just... psyched that they're making a Star Trek in the old canon continuity.
Exactly. I'm excited, but I'm also cautiously optimistic. But I like to give everyone the benefit of the doubt, so I won't pass judgment until I actually see the first episode. And you know what? TNG, like, the first season of TNG is not that great.
The first
it's
season...
It's got some gems.
Yeah, the first season of DS9 has one of the worst episodes I've ever seen.
Yeah. I mean, the show is gonna, like, I hope that they don't, if it needs to, like, find its, you know, its tone or whatever, I hope they don't just, like, can it, like, as a knee-jerk reaction. Because, like, Enterprise ended too soon.
Yeah.
It was just starting to get good. But the sad part is, like, the reason it started to get good is because they'd stopped, like,
they stopped
Paramount
giving a fuck.
Stopped caring. They're like, you guys can do whatever you want now.
Yeah.
And it was too late at that point.
Well, and who knows, maybe being streaming will help too. Anyway, we'll have the discussion next week too, I'm sure.
Yeah, I have things to say about the streaming aspect of it, but yeah. I'll save it for next week.
Yeah, we'll do that next week. But now let's get on this week's comic. You guys ready?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This week's comic.
This week, we start our Podcaster's Choice Volume 2 series. So each one of us are celebrating the fact that we have reached 300 episodes by going through our catalog of stuff that we read before and picking out a trade that we want to read the second volume of. So Jen was up first, and she chose a second trade of Monstrous. So we read Monstrous the Blood by Marjorie Liu. And this, we find Micah having just escaped from the Dusk Court, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And looking for answers. Yeah, what did you guys think of this one?
Well, I liked it. Yeah, I chose it because I really enjoyed it, so there's that.
Yeah, because so you had already read it,
Jen?
Yeah, I had already read it.
Why did you like it so much?
So my favorite thing is, like, I think when we recorded the original episode about this, Andy was like, I really hope that they don't just drag it out with the mystery of, like, what's going on, because that's a thing that happens so often. Attack on Titan style. And for this one, they did not do that. They, like, went right in. They're like, oh yeah, these two old gods are mad at each other. That's what's going on. Like, Zin is trying to regain its memories, and, like, Micah is actually doing something to try to piece together her past, which is something I'm not sure we see as much in various other comics that aren't as on point. So I don't know. I feel like they actually just developed it really well. And that's not a thing that I always see.
Yeah, I like that we actually, like, get a name of the old god inside of her, like, a couple issues after me complaining that it's going to drag out.
Yeah.
You know, we find out why that old... Maybe not why that old god... Yeah, we do find out why that old god is inside of her. And, like, now the questions are just, like, around the deepening part of the lore. Like, did Zin love the Shaman Empress? Because he calls her his beloved. But does he even have, like, I don't know if he has gender or expresses that way. Maybe it's a term of endearment the way Gollum says, my precious. But it's, like, it's the deep part of that lore for the world. Those are the only questions left now. Like, I know what Micah's wanting to do. Like, I know the answer she's seeking. I know who Zin is, how Zin got in there. Why Zin differs ideologically from the other gods, but then we have to get to the other question of what happened to the other old gods, and why are they kind of, like, there but not there? How did they get that to that point? Whereas, you know, Zin went this path, how come they didn't go this path too? But I think we're led to believe some of them did, kind of. Right, like the Kumea witch queen or whatever is kind of old goddy too. If I recall.
Yeah. But she was, like, possessed, I think.
Yeah.
By something that she should not have been possessed by.
Yeah. So it's, like, it's interesting. I mean, I still have questions. But they're the deep lore questions that I don't need to have answered to continue enjoying this. So I'm still, like, I don't know. There's the vibe with old gods and stuff. Like, this is the kind of fantasy that could be right up my alley, but there's, like, something just twisted a little bit here that makes me like, I don't know, I don't know if it's the ancients. I think for me there's, like, too many classifications of sentient beings to keep track of. Every time they mention ancients, arcanics, Kumea, old gods, and I just lose track after that. Exactly.
Well, I mean, and there's all the different, like, species. The cats have their own thing, and there's, like, oh, yeah, you said Arcanics already.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's just a lot going on. And now there's, like, mermaids.
Yeah.
Kinda. Yeah. But they're scary mermaids.
Yeah. You know, it just occurred to me when you mentioned the Cumea that they're not actually in this trade at all.
No.
I mean, their name is dropped, but we don't actually see them, which, like, I didn't even notice as we were going through, you know?
Oh, I kind of missed them.
Well, I mean, I don't know if I missed them, but, you know, it didn't occur to me that we didn't actually see them interact in any way.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like, I think for me, it's kind of like if we were reading a Star Wars comic and the Empire didn't show up at all. Like, it totally could happen in that universe that you have bounty hunters and Hutt space and rebels and different alien species. And you could do an entire Star Wars story and not have the Empire show up at all. But it kind of, not that you missed them necessarily, but I noticed that they were absent. I think because it also it got brought up when they were talking about the siege of Thyria. I'm like, oh, yeah, they're horrible. Yeah. I forgot all about them, and they're horrible. But okay. And then in the map at the end, I think Thyria is on the human side of the wall, so that's interesting, too. Or maybe that's not drawn accurately.
I don't know. Let me look at this again.
Let me look at this fucking map here.
I always love when you're reading a story that's like about a journey, when they put a map in. Oh, I love it.
You need to read Earthsea by Ursula K. Le Guin.
Okay.
Because that she when she was a kid, she would draw maps. Mm-hmm. And so one day she just stitched them all together and then wrote a story on the giant map. And it has her.
Is that how that came about?
Yeah, and it has her characters just kind of. It has the main character going all the fuck over the map because she just wanted to go everywhere on the map that she had drawn.
That's cool. I love that.
Yeah. I love it. And she's a fantastic author otherwise, but, like, I love that's the backstory of that. It's like the map version of Tolkien and his languages.
Oh, yeah. Thyria is on the human side of the wall.
But they don't go there because of the threat of the sea goddess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they were able to stay, like, more neutral in the war. Because it sounds like they're more interested in, like, oceanfaring and free trade type stuff. Right? Mm-hmm. They let in people.
Yeah, they're the open
and
port.
And I think at some point the Cumea do come in and they're like, we're looking for these people. And then, you know, they run away. But it's not like they're the authority in that place.
Yeah.
I thought they were the queens in the people that were searching were representative of the queens of Thyria or something.
Oh, was that it? Okay.
I knew we get them too, and we get the sea empress's mermaids or whatever.
I thought she was one of the queens, the lead mermaid.
See, this is where I just, like, I lose track. There's so many species. I'm like, I don't know. Mike is just getting hunted by, like, everybody. The Dusk Court, the Dawn Court, the Thyria.
Well, it's crazy. Like, most people are still like, give us your weapon. Like, that nobody's realized that she's the weapon yet. I mean, I guess most people that's, like, when she unleashes her power, they die, so. Yeah. Nobody's around to spread the word.
Well, and they know that she has a piece of the mask, so they assume that then the mask is the weapon. So I think that's why a lot of them want the mask. I don't think they realize that the mask doesn't give them what they want. It's something different. Something also powerful and horrible, but different from what they're looking for.
Word.
Yeah, I feel like the new mystery is, like, what exactly is going on with that mask? Because it ends with everyone who is in a position of power, you know, looking at the mask. Micah holds it up to her face, and she can see who has the other parts. So she can see, like, one of the queens of Thyria has her section, and then is that the woman with the black hair? That's not her aunt, I think. That's got to be someone else.
The Blade of the East or whatever?
Yeah, because doesn't the Blade of the East have the foxtails?
The Blade of the East is her aunt.
Yeah. So I think the other person shown holding a mask does not have foxtails.
I think that is her aunt. I don't remember if she... Okay. I don't think she did have foxtails. Because I think the point of Micah and her, like, mom and her sister is that they could pass as human, even though they're Arcanics. Right?
Oh, yes. Hold on. No, she has three tails. We see her, at the end of the first chapter. She's hanging out with that little monkey that we see in the first trade, who's, like, at the Wolf Queen's court. They kill a bunch of children and summon their ghosts. Yeah. So, just caveat, I actually read this, like, a month ago, so my memory is a little fuzzy. I did refresh, but there is a lot in here.
Yeah, there is. I'm looking at 143, where she sees the other pieces of the mask. And one of them is, like, in armor with the sword across her back, like, eating a heart. So I don't think we've seen that person standing over a pile of skulls. I don't think we've seen that person.
Yeah. Yet. That sounds dire.
That don't sound so good.
Oh, yeah, she does have tails to write. I know, I was, like, a little bit late.
The other
to that.
the other thing I'm interested in here from a character point of view, Micah feels cardboard a little bit as we walk through this. But I'm interested in learning more about her relationship with her mother. Because what we've gotten here is that her mother had her to try and call out the god from the Shaman Empress family. Like, try and pull that power forward.
Right.
So we are to understand that her mother, at least from Micah's point of view, her mother didn't really give a shit about her. Her mother just wanted her for that. But then we get flashbacks every once in a while where her mother seems actually caring. And so it's interesting how we're getting these memories from the lens of Micah.
Yeah,
and I want to see where we get those memories from other places too, because Tiger Daddy genuinely cares, and Tiger Daddy said that her mom genuinely cared too, but he also didn't know what we know that Micah knows now. I'm assuming he didn't know. I don't know. It's difficult because we have to piece that together from her point of view.
So what my take on that by the end of this trade was that her mother was trying to make her this, you know, release the god or the power or become this weapon. But I think the mom, kind of changed her mind. Like, she started to regret her choice. And so the memories that we're starting to see, I think the memories are kind of like in chronological order. Like, we're starting with the oldest memories. And because towards the end, you see the mom trying to, and it's like the last panel. She's trying to protect her. Like, they're on the horse, the unicorn?
Yes.
And says, she says, "And you're my heart, my little wolf." Oh, it says, "And your heart." No, that's not the quote I was looking for. Oh, yeah, because she says, "No matter what happens, you belong to no one, and you will be controlled by no one." Yeah. So I think the mom, and she also says, you know, Micah apologizes for not doing more to, like, fight off the bad guys. But then the mom says she was afraid that they would take her from her. So I think the mom, like, changed her too. Yeah. Like, initially she, you know, Micah was a means to an end. But then she changed her feelings. So, but I think Micah, you know, maybe she, like, blocked things out, or it was just traumatic, so she didn't really remember, and now her mom's gone, so, yeah. That's my take.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting too as Zin gets more of its memories back too, because Zin was connected with the Shaman Emperor, sure, but that's only what, 3 generations removed from Micah? Not that far.
I thought it was thousands of years.
Right, but isn't one of them an ancient or something?
Yeah, Micah's grandmother. Is it her grandmother?
Yeah, is an ancient.
Yeah.
So then also, Moriko Half-Wolf, the mom, could also have been alive for a long fucking time, too.
Yeah.
I'm gathering. So it could only be a couple of generations, but thousands of years. So it's interesting what Zin... He talks about having been asleep, but what is... Like, I'm thinking... I've been listening to a lot of Star Trek podcasts, so I'm thinking, like, if it's a Trill... Like, it gets some of the information of the host, right? Like, does any of more, because it's passed down through the bloodline, does any of Moriko's memories get into Zin? Does Zin have any access to any of that, or not because he wasn't awake? So that kind of interplay is interesting, too. And I mean, there's plenty of time here for the comic to explore that more. But, like, that's what I'm talking about. Like, the deep lore stuff, like, It's the deep lore, but it also would be revealing of Moriko's character and Micah and her motivations. Like, Micah, I don't know. I don't really... She's just so angry all the time, and we're supposed to get flashes of her being not a total asshole to Kippa, and like, oh, I guess she's a good person. But then she's like, nah, let him torture the cat.
I think maybe we get those little flashes so we maybe... Not so we can say, look, she's actually a good person, but more that she has potential to be a good person. Because, and the reason I say that is because as the trade, like I mentioned before, you know, the mom, Moriko, begins to love Micah, right?
Yeah.
And I think so, as Micah remembers these things, maybe she'll soften. And become more of a caretaker. Because I think Kippa will be... Micah's going to have to care for her in a motherly way. Or be a mother figure, maybe, as the story progresses. I mean, that's just a guess. Obviously, I mean, the third volume isn't out yet. So I don't know how far along the story is.
I mean, you could say also Micah is treating Kippa the way that she remembers her mother treating her. Mm-hmm. Like, Micah's, I mean, not treating Kippa like total shit, but like Micah is making Kippa learn by letting her, like leaving her to the wolves. She'll step in when Kippa's in serious harm or serious, like, danger. But other than that, you figure shit out, Kippa, because you gotta learn this stuff. And it's... Mike is very much the, oh, you want to stick your fork in that light socket there, huh? Go ahead, see what happens. Kind of a mom. Because that's her memory of having grown up with Moriko. So it's... I would say she already is being a mother to Kippa. Just a shitty mother. Because that's how she remembers it happening.
There's a scene where they meet the Blood Fox, and she's like, screw this, I'm not going through with this deal to release a crazy ancient. And he conjures up an illusion of Moriko Half-Wolf, and she says, Micah, please stay. And Micah goes, fuck you, my mother never said please. And you kind of get the sense that her mom just, like, part of it is genuinely to ensure survival. This idea that she kind of has to be strong, because... they are hunted, and there's a war. But at the same time, you almost get the sense that Micah is actually kinder to Kippa than Moriko ever was to Micah.
Hmm.
I don't know, like, I think there was something early on where she describes something her mother did, like, as training, or something along those lines, and it was... I wish I could remember. But it was, like, something really harsh that you would never do to a child. But, like, for instance, she wants Kippa to learn to swim. And you see Kippa in the water being like, oh, I'm drowning, look at me. But then there's this shark pirate swimming next to her.
I love Jan.
Yeah, and he picks her up and he's like, okay, that's enough for today. And I think Kippa puts herself in danger voluntarily a lot of the time. She always says, like, I want to come with you. I'm not leaving you. If you decide to do such and such a thing, I will help you. There's a lot of loyalty there that Micah doesn't demand, but yet is given. Because Micah's never like, you have to come with me to the scary island. She never says, if you don't do this thing, I will hurt you or I will force you to do it. She's always trying to protect Kippa, to say, like, stay out of danger. You should stay here. Stay back. At the end, when they're leaving in the boat and, like, the ferryman is like, oh, I accept your sacrifice. You know, Micah's like, stay the fuck away from her. So I think she actually has a much kinder relationship with Kippa than her mother ever had with her.
Yes. And, I like keyed off. You called the shark pirate a he, but it's totally a chick.
Oh, it's a she?
It's totally a chick.
Yeah, isn't her name Old Tooth?
Old Jan.
Or is that her
Old Tooth?
Is that her nickname?
I think it's her nickname. I don't know, but she has a thing over where her boobs would be.
Okay.
But I like it because this comic, like, early on in the first trade, almost all of the characters that matter are female. And part of me was like, oh, it's because of the Kumea and their witches and their order is probably female and all that kind of stuff. But there's no Kumea in this, and still probably 85% of all the prominent characters in this are female. The only guys I can think of are the Fox Ancient and Tiger Daddy.
Master Ren also.
Yeah, Ren. Master Ren, yeah. That's right. Ren is also, but like, other than that, like, I think they're all female characters. The ones that matter.
Yeah. Also, why does a shark have boobs?
I don't know.
You know, fish.
That's, I think, you know what, Jen? You're making a joke. go, David, go.
Well, I was going to say that the mermaid has boobs also, but she doesn't have nipples, unless she's wearing a shirt. But I don't think she is, because it's, like, scaly. So maybe they're just, like, float bladders or something.
They inflate and deflate depending on how deep she wants to dive.
Yeah, it's ballast.
There you go. See, you're making a joke, Jen, and so are you, David, but I think that's part of my disconnect with this, is like my association with anthropomorphic animals in comics, my primary association in my head is like the weird furry comics that were in the corner of SDCC the first couple of years I went.
Okay, let me tell you. So I was reading this comic at lunchtime at work in the cafeteria, and I got to the part where you see the wolf ancient.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, she's naked, right? I mean, because she puts clothes on later. And I thought, holy shit, somebody's going to think I'm reading a furry comic.
Right? And I it's Marjorie Liu, and this art is top-notch. Not that, you know, people who do some of that furry stuff is not top-notch. Sorry, there's some, like, guy with a crotch rocket going up and down my street. You can hear that?
Yep.
But, like, I know it's not going to get into furry territory, but there is just like some awkward discomfort there too with a lot of these characters. Tiger Daddy feels a little weird. The Wolf Ancient feels a little weird. the really sexual cat lady that Ren goes to see in the temple.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, it feels super awkward. Like, that's a real sexy cat. And that's not even, like, an anthropomorphized cat. That's just a cat with extra tails that talks. like in really sexual poses. And like just I like it every time I get that like weird heebie-jeebie feeling while I'm reading this, it just makes me disconnect a little bit. And I think that might be the root of my disconnect with this comic, because the old god stuff is cool. I'm not like into the tentacle thing. Like, I'm not big on the like Lovecraftian thing. That's not like my jam. But old gods, ancients, arcanics, Cumea, war, fantasy, like all this stuff is my jam, but there's something that's disconnecting me from this, and I honestly think it's the anthropomorphized animals of all the things. I think that's what's doing it.
You know what made me, like, pulled me out briefly while I was reading this? Is that they say the F word. They say fuck a lot.
Yeah.
And ever since Battlestar Galactica made an alternate word, I know that theirs was so they could get it on TV, basically. But, like, now when I'm reading, like, other, like, fiction that takes place in another universe, basically, and they're using, like, normal human slang, it's like, what?
Yeah. And even Battlestar Galactica was pick and choose, because they did do frack. But then they had one of my favorite lines in sci-fi, no more Mr. Nice Guy is.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
That's fantastic line, delivered perfectly. But that's an Earth saying. And, like, if you're going to do frack because it's a different culture and they wouldn't have fuck, like, okay, linguistically, if they speak a similar language, that all makes sense to do frack. But how does Mr. Nice Guy get here, too? Unless that's, like, the one phrase that carried over to New Earth all the way from pre-ancient times.
Yep, that was the one.
That's the one saying that made it. Yeah, and it does pull me out too when I'm reading this. That pulled me out too when Sexy Cat said fucking. I don't remember what the context was. I just remember Sexy Cat dropped the F-bomb. I also am interested in Ren too, because he calls himself Master Ren, right? And he mentions a couple
times.
Does he
call himself Master Ren, or does
do other people call
Kippa
him?
Kippa calls him.
Well, yeah, Kippa it might does. Just be Kippa. But he says, I like doing things that make the poets write about me. And he says it in a way that they've done it before, that, like, he's a notable person in the cat world. And so, like, there's a lot of mystery on him as a character. Not just because he goes and does shady shit, because cats are shady in this world. Like, he's definitely shady, but there's mystery around, like, the history of his character, too, because he mentions it like that. And it makes me think that he's actually a cat of some repute. And to be able to just waltz into that temple and talk to the sexy cat priestess or whatever that was. Like, he's got to have some sway. And I'm curious, like, what his motivation is here, too. Like, he's mentioned Tuya, and he's staying with Micah because of his promise to Tuya. But I don't buy that completely. I find him to be a very interesting character.
Yeah. I think he genuinely cares about Kippa. I think that's a given.
Yeah.
What is it? Somewhere in here, I don't remember if it was like in the lore in the back of each chapter or something someone said to him, but they talk about his number of tails.
Yeah.
And they say something like, you know, he's a really gifted necromancer. And he has two tails. As though, like, the number of tails denotes power. But then again, we see all these others that we see, like, three and four and five tails doing things like raising the dead and all manner of, like, I don't know, magic plot stuff. So,
yeah, I don't know, maybe fewer tails is more powerful. Maybe you grow tails as you get older, and it's a, you know, he's so powerful but still so young.
I don't know.
We see a lot of cats and hear about them, but we don't know much about their culture. And I appreciate, too, that they are all throughout this world, but they also have a culture that's very separate from everyone else. Like we get the lore in the back, but it's cats talking about cats. And we don't really get anybody else talking about cat culture. The only time we get more of an insight into cat culture is when Ren does it. And I appreciate that there's, like, they almost have, like, a separate society that weaves between these other two, and that they've maintained that distance but still managed to integrate. I don't know if that's why they have the reputation for being shady, but I think that's cool. I like that about cats, that they are separate. The whole Ubasti thing and the temples and, like, that temple's not built. No human or arcana can get in there.
I love the kitty walkways that they have.
Yes.
But yeah, I really like the cats. I don't know. I actually like all the animal lore, and it is kind of creepy furry. But at the same time, like, I don't know. When you see things like a grumpy old wolf man, I feel like it adds a weight of fairy tale to it, mm-hmm. or like old mythology. Because, you know, in like older myths, Norse, Greek, we see the lines between human, or between god and animal kind of blur. Loki turns into a mare at one point.
Zeus turns into a swan and fucks somebody.
Yeah, Zeus turns into a lot of different animals and has sex with people.
The swan is really traumatic, though, in my memory.
I feel really, like...
I always thought the cow was the...
Yeah, the bull. The bull was, like, the most threatening of the bunch.
Yeah, threatening. That's why, like, I don't know, like... I don't know, swan just seems... Like, at least that's a mammal still.
What about golden shower? He did that, too. He turned into a golden shower and impregnated someone.
Our president likes golden showers, so...
There is that.
I'll cut that out.
But yeah, I mean, like, I see the blood fox, and he seems crazy, and I think it adds weight to it with the fangs and the crazy fox eyes, whereas you could have, like, a crazy old man there, but there's something far more insidious about having... the fox. I don't know. And then we have, like, archetypal associations with foxes, right? They're supposed to be clever. They're supposed to be kind of sneaky, and they'll get all your chickens in the middle of the night, that kind of thing, right? Like, foxes are a little, like, criminal in the animal world, and then you contrast that to someone who's, like, half wolf, and wolves are supposed to be like pack animals and fierce and noble. Right, yeah. So, you know, you have this contrast, and then they kind of fit it, where the fox keeps trying to trick her, he uses illusion, he tries to lie to her, he tries to manipulate her emotionally, and the whole time she's just kind of like, fuck off. So, I think it works in some ways as a shortcut for character development, where it doesn't feel too much like Marjorie Liu is just relying on archetype. It's more like you have these associations that are in there that I think kind of help it along in terms of making us understand the lore without having to read hundreds and hundreds of pages of, like, that one cat philosopher talking.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, the island is interesting, too, because with that Zin has, like, a fear of the area, but also, like, a reverence for it. Like, why are you all here desecrating the bones of somebody who is my friend? But then also fearful, like, something here is also strong enough to control and wield that power in a way that is unnatural. And he's like, it's not this fox that's doing it either. This fox is not powerful enough to do what I'm afraid of. There's something else here, too. Which is kind of interesting. Like, the idea that there is something inherent within the earth that is powerful and fearsome. And that's something I think of Tolkien in on the opposite end of the spectrum that they didn't put in the movie, which was Tom Bombadil.
Oh, yeah.
Who is ridiculous... but serves a purpose in the story because he is a personification that represents the earth itself. And he takes the ring and he plays with it like it's nothing. So it's this message that, yes, for all of you people, for all of you mortals, this is perilously dangerous, but the world will endure regardless of whatever you all do. Like, the world itself is more powerful and everlasting than all of this. So there's a sense, too, that, like, sure, there's arcanics and ancients and old gods, but the earth itself has a power beyond all of that. That's cool. I like that.
I think there's even a line where Micah says something like, so this is what happens to the body of a god. The world swallows it.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, I mean, even the old gods are not that immortal when it comes down to it. They're not as eternal as the earth.
Yeah. I want to know where they came from, too. Like, how did they get there? They talk about coming there from somewhere else.
Yeah.
Are they planeswalkers? Did they build a crystal spaceship? I don't know. I'm trying to think of all the other ways that you get from one planet to another in fantasy.
Well, do they have ships with star jamming technology like in Dungeons and Dragons?
I did not know that was a thing.
I didn't know that was a D&D thing.
I thought star jamming was a D&D thing. I have to look it up.
Could be. I don't remember.
Maybe I'm thinking of something else.
I mean, I've never actually played a game of D&D.
Really?
I know. I really, really want to. And actually, now that my daughter's going to bed like at 7 o'clock, we could start like a 7:30 group. Have people come over, snacks and D&D for a couple hours.
I know Grant and his friends will want to start up a group now that we're back from Germany, so you're always welcome to join.
Oh, that's the thing. It would have to be here, though.
Oh. It's called spell jamming. Spell jammer. It's a setting where they can do interstellar travel. Like the ship, it's like they're like literally like normal ships that can go over the water, but they also have something called a spell jamming helm that allows them to fly in outer space.
All right.
That's awesome.
But it's fantasy.
Yeah. Oh, maybe they went through the wardrobe from Narnia.
What are we even talking about anymore?
How the old gods got to this planet.
How old gods got here. Well, a tesseract is a thing that exists.
Yeah, that's true.
They've always been there, just asleep. And like Cthulhu.
I do appreciate that we... Like, the other thing I really like about this trade is that we previously got the discussion that this old god in Micah is terrifying and dangerous and was the source of all this weaponized destruction in the middle of the war. And is fearsome. And then we get that what we see is the old gods walking around the planet. We're assuming they're ghosts that have been dead for a long time. But now we get the flashback between Zin and Hajin, and it's like, oh, they might just be alive, but like phased out somehow, found a way to coexist on this planet that they like. I like that one of them, I think Hajin, like had hesitation, like didn't want to be there because they were causing harm and killing things. And like, even though they look monstrous and terrifying, like, they have morals and have a sense of right and wrong that kind of aligns with us.
Yeah, and it's weird because normally you'd think, oh, they're so big and immortal, the whole morality concept wouldn't even apply to them, right? I think that's a common thing that we see with fantasy gods, like, oh, puny mortals can't even understand us, but... These guys are like, well, we're hurting all the native animals, and that's sad. So,
yeah, but I mean, and yeah, they have that discussion too, because Zin is kind of like, yeah, but we earn this, bro. Like, we'll, you know, we earn the right to be here, and we deserve to be happy too. And we might kill everything around us, but we don't have to, you know, we don't have to spread far and wide across this planet. We just need some of it for us. Which is reasonable. Like, I don't know how they got there, but you get the sense from their discussion that they've tried for a long time to find a place that they can be. And this planet is fantastic. Like, it's beautiful. And it's a legitimate point. Like, if you've had a long struggle and, like, if it's you and me walking around and, you know, we're killing insects by touching them accidentally, like, yeah, that's kind of sad, but if we found a place to live, you know, I live in my house killing bugs all the time. I kill a spider on purpose today. You know?
You monster.
Yeah. Right? Like, so, I mean, they deserve a home too, the same way, you know, you and I do. And maybe Hajin's just being a fucking hippie and needs to shut the hell up. You know, it's a discussion that's worth having for them too. I mean, honestly, for us, we see it's like a majestic elk or something, touch it and die, and that's sad. But from their perspective, who gives a fuck?
So this is actually a story of environmentalism in the end.
Yes. Yes, it is. Well, do you guys want to rate this?
Sure.
Yeah, sure.
I'll go first. And then I'll go fart. I'm going to give this a 3. There's stuff about this I really like, and there's stuff that just kind of, like, just disconnects me. And it's not necessarily the sexy animals. It's not necessarily that they say fuck at weird times. It kind of pulls me apart. There's a lot of stuff in here that's really interesting, but I'm not connecting to it the way I think I probably would, and I can't put my finger on why not, which is horrible reviewing, I know. But there it is. The art is fucking fantastic. Go listen to the previous episode where we talk about how it's just gorgeous, because it's still just fucking gorgeous. There's no page on... There's like a couple panels with the fox ancient, where he's going crazy, that look a little wonky, but like it's like two panels, and the rest of this is top fucking notch art. Like, I don't even want to imagine how long it took Sana Takeda to draw some of these pages, because, Jesus Christ, some of them just like have tons of background and foreground and filigree and detail everywhere. Which, aside from taking a ton of work, also does a really good job of just nailing the tone and feel of this world repeatedly over and over all out throughout this comic. I have a disconnect here, but it's certainly not with the art, because the art's fuck damn gorgeous. Which is why I'm putting it at 3, because I, you know, for me, an average is a 2.5, but I'm going to go read volume 3 when it comes out just to have more of this art in my eyeballs and see what happens with the story. So this is definitely better than average for me, because the art's just on fucking point. 3. How about you, Jen?
I'm going to give it a 4. I really like this. I am absolutely buying volume 3 the second it comes out. I mean, I chose this as volume 2 because I really enjoyed reading it. I like how they didn't dawdle with the story. They didn't waste time. They got in, like, Micah is doing something. She's seeking answers. It's maybe not super effective because she doesn't have a lot of clues to go on, but she's taking, like, the most logical course that we as the audience can understand she'd take. And it focuses on what she's doing. It's not, like, switching between all the machinations of everyone else. Everything centers on her. And even the lore does, and I like that. I really like that they gave the motives for the old gods. I am really invested in finding out whether or not Micah is, like, a reincarnation of the Shaman Empress for reals, and, you know, like, why her, and what the Dusk Court has to do with this. I really want to know. So, you know, just every time I read, I feel satiated because some things are answered, and then I'm curious because new questions arise. Like you said, like, I can't say more than you did on the art. It's just, it's perfect. It's really good art, and that's that. So yeah, a 4.
Yeah, because, like, what the hell is Tuyu doing? Tuyu is a big character, and then a big reveal at the end of Trade 1. And there's so many questions that got answered in this. I didn't even notice that Tuyu, like, showed up for half a panel.
Yeah.
And a throwaway mention. I'm like, oh yeah, that's a big fucking deal. I guess we'll get back around to that sometime? Sure. How about you, David?
Yeah, I'm also going to go with the 4. I really like this comic a lot. It's one of my favorite that I've read in a long time. I think because it's so, like... I don't know what to compare it to. I mean, it's kind of got a lot of different elements. It's got, like, some quest, like, fantasy thing, but there's also, like, steampunk and pirates and crazy different creatures. Like, I just love it. There's so much to like about this. You guys said a lot already, so I'm just going to go with I like it a lot, so it's going to have a 4.
I like it a lot.
I like it a lot.
Yeah, so thank you, Marjorie Liu, for writing this. Thank you for Sana Takeda for doing the art. And thank you, Russ Wooten, for doing the letters. And thank you for the editors that put the work into this. No matter what we've said, positive or negative, about this comic, we wouldn't have a chance to sit here and talk about it if you all hadn't created it. So thank you. No matter what the rating is, even if we were doing this thanking thing stuff at the beginning, I would have no problem thanking Seth MacFarlane for doing Spawn as much as we ragged on it. Todd MacFarlane. Ron MacFarlane. I'll thank anybody for that, honestly.
You know what, Spawn, you know, as much as we did not like it when we read it, Spawn was important for the comic book industry.
That's right.
So, yeah, it's not the best comic, but it's still relevant. And
what should we rag on instead? The Blue Water comics?
What? I loved my... Which one did I read?
You did Black Eyed Peas?
Black Eyed Peas, yeah.
I think it did Betty White.
Yeah, you did Betty White. there's nothing to complain about there. That's
did you do Lady Gaga, Jen?
I did Lady Gaga, yeah. I learned things.
That one was fun. Go back and find that episode, people, because that shit was fun. anyway, yes, thank all of those people. If you want to thank us, go to patreon.com/welcometocomics and become a patron today. If you become a patron for as little as a penny, you get access to bonus content, but you also get access to that bonus content for freezies now. You can just listen to it all by going to patreon.com/welcometocomics. But that penny will let us know that you care and that you like us and appreciate what we do. You can go to welcometocomics.com, and on the left, you click on future shows. You can see what we have coming up. You can click on past shows and see what we have the previous 300 episodes of this bad boy. You can also follow me on social media at Jolly Andy. You can follow us on social media at Welcome to Comics, which I think is just posting whenever we do an episode out. But yeah, next week we're going to continue this volume 2 thing. We're going to read, we're going to read Mighty Thor, Lords of Midgard by Jason Aaron. This is the, Lady Thor run. And we did volume 1, my wife and I did volume 1 because David and Jen both needed the week off. And as fortune should have it, Jen needs next week off. So David, it might be you, me, and Mithali doing an episode of this bad boy. My wife's making a cameo for the second time in 6 years. but it'll be fun. I'm looking forward to it, and I encourage you, Jen, even though you're not going to be here, to read at least volume 1 of this Thor run, because it's hella good.
I will.
And, you know, try reading the second one if you get time. It's cool. You can join us too. We can have a 4-person show. Why not? Let's break the rules.
Oh.
So, yeah.
I didn't know that was a rule, 3 people.
No, we've broken it in multiple times. Yeah, whatever. Yeah. If you want to see what's coming after that, welcome to comics.com, future shows. David's got his thing picked out. And we have another series after this planned out, and the series after that planned out. And by the time you hear this, that should all be on the website, welcometocomics.com. All right, until next week, everybody. Goodbye!
Goodbye.
Goodbye.